When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
Me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
Today we're speaking with Professor Kim Wolfe, head of the Drug Control Centre at King's College London, about doping control during the Commonwealth Games.
Sounds heavy.
Yeah, a weighty subject, yeah.
An important one, though.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's one that people worry about, isn't it, with running. It's like, can I trust what I'm seeing, or what's the rigours that are going on around doping? So it's interesting to talk to her about actually what kind of involved process that is. It kind of resurrected a bit of faith for me, actually, in that process, I think.
There's a general cynicism around athletics and high performance sport because of previous eras, and that's all justified because people were cheating. And but you can kind of get bogged down in thinking that that's a constant that doesn't evolve, where in fact the way that the measures that WADA and the sort of the governing bodies that relate to doping control and stuff like that, how they sort of then fit in with the actual test centers that and the all the people who are performing these tests, and the sort of the evolution of the equipment and the standards and everything like that, it's good to revisit and actually have a refresher on what that looks like now in 2022 versus, you know, retrospective, oh well, it was always bad and da 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 da.
Yeah, exactly.
Hi, Jane. You haven't spoken to you for a little bit. Good. How's your running?
Yes, okay, actually. Got a marathon in the autumn. Don't know which one, but I'll do some.
Wow, that's mysterious.
I'm not trying to be. I'm really not. I basically...
Tune in next week to find out
tune
more.
Tune in next week, yeah. My running diary. So I got a place in London, got in on the ballot for Chicago, and then New Balance have kindly said, do I want to run New York? But I don't know. I don't know which one I want to do. I just don't know if I'm over marathons. I don't know what I'm doing, but I've decided to just go ahead and train as if I was going to run a marathon. And if I decide, you know, I've got up to like the 12-mile mark. If I decide when I get to the 15-mile mark, it's not for me. It's not for me. Someone else can have those spots.
Right. What are the dates for these marathons? Let's break this down.
We're talking the second... Right. My calendar won't open. It's open. It's open. That was a tense moment. We're talking the 2nd of October for London.
Mm-hmm.
The 9th for Chicago.
A week later.
But the flights for Chicago was £700. So unless Runner's World wants to pay for that, I'm probably out. And then luck. I think the...
No comment.
The 6th, I think, for New York of November.
So you could do London. You could easily do London and New York. Easily.
Yeah, this has been said, and I've said no to that.
No.
Because that would be...
I'm pretty sure you were planning to do...
I'd be tempted by New York, I reckon.
Yeah, I think I'd be tempted
if I was gonna
by
pick
New
one,
York.
I reckon.
I think New York.
Because it's very hard to get in. Amazing city. Yeah.
I also think New York would be the best for the joy plan.
Yeah, it would.
Wouldn't it?
Okay, nice.
It would be the best race to do the joy plan on and just run, walk, have a great time, soak up all that positive vibes. Not saying London isn't, but I feel like London, I mean...
We've done it.
London's, yeah, and the fact that, you know, you two would be at London, wouldn't you? So I couldn't just run, walk past you. Shit, like, you know, people are like...
Just jeering. If we saw you going slow, I just jeer. Jane, I saw you run in London last year and shouted at you so excessively with absolutely zero response. So I'm not doing that again.
Tune you out. Block you out.
Yeah.
I've been hurt yeah. before.
I've learned to block you both out of my head.
Once bitten, twice shy, I'm telling you, when it comes to cheering for Jane.
So I don't know. We'll see what happens there, but very exciting. An exciting time to be running. But how about you two? How's the running going?
Ben's running loads. He's up to like, he's 100 mile week in.
Easily.
I've seen Ben on Strava. No, you did 11 miles the other day.
Yeah.
Didn't you?
I know.
Look at you.
Well,
Ben's back.
Let's not go that far. Ben's back hurts, if that's... I have been doing more running, and some of it is creeping onto Strava again, which is fine. But I do keep a lid on that a little bit, just for my own sort of like...
But are you joyfully running? Or are you running?
Yeah. Oh, today I went for a run through some fields, and it was joyful. It was lovely. The, sort of the wheat was out. It hasn't been cut yet. Everything was looking great. I had a lovely, joyful... Actually, I got a bit lost, which was nice, because then you sort of have to find your way back, and footpaths aren't always where they say they are on a map and all those sorts of things. So it was the sort of running I used to do when I was much younger, and that felt lovely. And I saw some... I did avoid a field full of cows, which was good, because there was loads of them. I did get slightly unnerved by that situation. But yeah, apart from that, it was great.
Lovely.
What about you, Rick?
And Rick's been smashing out ludicrous pace, which is going to be unnerving when we try and run a half marathon together.
I've been getting some return to form, I think, but
Rick's doing
Wednesday
back.
Nights
Look
now.
At this.
It's all right.
Wednesday nights, and your Tuesday night, and I'm doing a bit of fartlek stuff. Actually, I think like anyone who's sort of got, you know, is going back into the speed work world, I do think fartlek is a bit more of an easy sell than intervals. It just feels a little bit more fun and a bit more random, which I guess is the idea. But I think you can get an equally good workout. So me and George Bull, who I often bring up on this podcast, he never listens, but George Bull will be out fartlekking around for about 50 minutes this evening.
If I could give you a speed session, I'd give you fartlek, I'd give Ben the track, and then I'd give myself tempo. I think that sums us up as individuals. I think so.
Yeah, I love that.
I think that's a fair.
I'd go with that.
Yeah.
I'm not, I mean, the track is so alien to me, but I would probably, I do enjoy it. I need to do more of it. Do you know what I did the other day? Hills. I haven't done hills for a long time. They're good.
Hell on earth. Get in the bin.
Honestly, we did this poll, right? And I was like, of the kind of tougher sessions, like hills, tempo or intervals, like, what's your favourite? Our audience, hills. I was like, I would have put loads of money on that being the least favourite.
Sadists.
Just like, yeah, hills. Like, really? I thought that's one that everyone drops because it's just like, just, you know, the thought of it is really hard.
I feel like you're really conquering something though. You are conquering something
true,
with a hill.
Yeah, true.
You know, you get to the top of the hill. Like doing a lap of a track is just sort of, it's a similar sort of feeling, but I feel like going up something, you're fighting gravity. That's a big deal.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's a victory, isn't it? It's a victory.
Wow.
Anyway.
All right, well, I think we should probably get our guest of the week on. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown. Our guest this week is Professor Kim Wolfe, head of the Drug Control Centre at King's College London. The DCC is the UK's only World Anti-Doping Agency accredited lab and will work in partnership with UKAD, the Commonwealth Games Federation and Birmingham 2022 to deliver a comprehensive anti-doping programme during the Games. So, Professor Wolfe, welcome to the Runner's World podcast. In the simplest of terms, can you explain what your role is at the Commonwealth Games?
Okay, well, thank you very much for inviting me along today. And the Drug Control Centre based at King's College London is responsible for testing the samples collected by the doping control officers at the Games. And we test them against the WADA prohibited list.
We were just talking before this started officially, but we're sort of these protocols that come into play and... the sort of substances that people are looking for and all these sorts of things. I mean, I know that the DCC at King's College London is the only one that meets all these standardised parts of WADA and other governing bodies. How ever evolving is that? How continuous is the change in the list and what you guys are looking for?
Well, it is ever evolving. So there is a monitoring list that's published that... WADA publishes so that there are substances monitored before they get onto the prohibited list. And then there is consultation on the prohibited list and it's published on a yearly basis. So that it's always being updated to reflect the ever-changing nature of the use of banned substances, I guess.
In terms of how rigorous the testing is at the Commonwealth Games, I mean, is every athlete tested, and how often? What's the kind of frequency like?
Okay, well, the testing program really is down to the Commonwealth Games Federation. And so as the testing lab, we don't have any say or any knowledge of what that planned might be. So we just get the samples to the laboratory from the games, and we don't know the individuals that are being tested. We only have a barcode. So everything from our end is very independent of the collection of the sample end, so that we just test all the samples in an anonymized fashion. So we're protecting the athlete in that sense, really, and giving the process some integrity.
That's really interesting. I guess when athletes turn around and say the test was incorrect, you have no control then. You don't know whose test you're testing.
No, we don't have any idea of the individual who the sample belongs to. But obviously there's a chain of custody form. So at the collection site, the athlete will pick a bottle in which to provide their urine or their blood sample, and then they will sign to say that they're happy with the process, and that form follows, leaves them, and then travels with the courier or whoever is bringing the samples to the laboratory, and then we sign that to say that we've received the sample. So it's the paper trail that goes with the laboratory, with the sample, that provides the chain of custody to ensure that the sample that's taken is received safely at the laboratory.
While the games are taking place, are you set to be testing sort of daily? Is it a constant thing?
Yeah, so we're during the games, we're obviously open longer hours than we would normally be open, and we're open during weekends because events are going on over the weekend. So we provide a daily service for the Commonwealth Games and any sports federations that are at the games who want to have a sample analysed. So yeah, we're open for the receipt of samples every day.
How sophisticated has testing become, Kim? Because I think a lot of people worry that the dopers are always one step ahead, and we've seen with films like Icarus the kind of extent to which people and whole countries will go to in terms of trying to outsmart people trying to catch them. What kind of confidence do you think we can have with how sophisticated testing has become?
Well, I think testing is hugely sophisticated. We obviously have to cover the range of prohibited samples, and there are several different drug classes that we cover in that, and the instruments that we use, I tend to say, are a bit like Formula One cars, really. They're highly sophisticated. They are able to detect drugs at very, very low concentrations and the breakdown products of those drugs in urine. So these days we identify what's known as long-term metabolites, which means that we can look to over a longer period of time to see whether doping has taken place over a wider period of time. So it's become a very sophisticated process, and we're trying to identify people who are involved themselves in a very sophisticated process. So it is complicated, but I think the methodology is up to the job, certainly, in that we can identify very low concentrations of different substances. And it's been likened to identifying a single drop of water within an Olympic-sized swimming pool. So that gives you an idea of how sophisticated our instruments are.
Can I ask, how does it work? So if an athlete's doing a race on a Saturday, and they give you a sample on the Friday, all fine. You get another sample Saturday morning and it's not fine. Does that athlete race? How quick is it? Like, do their results just get kind of put in the bin afterwards? Like, if there is doping, do you mean how quick do you pull them off the track?
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Well, it depends, because there are different types of testing programs. So the standard WADA testing program enables the laboratory to deliver the results in 20 days. When we're running testing for an event like the Commonwealth Games, then testing is much, much quicker and we have fast throughput. So you also have in-competition testing and out-of-competition testing. And usually the idea is to get the results to the sports federation before the athlete competes or takes part again. So that's the idea. So the idea is ideally that the athlete isn't allowed to compete when there is a positive test in the process somewhere.
Typically within these high performance sports, there's always a sort of sense of cynicism around it, particularly, I mean, if myself being a cycling fan, there's a whole era of cycling which is sort of like treated with great suspicion. But, you know, off the back of that, there's things like a biological passport and things like those sorts of aspects. Is that still a relevant aspect of how this testing carries on? Is it building a bigger picture of how someone's behaving on a day-to-day basis rather than just like momentary samples from an event?
Yes, I think the longitudinal testing for the athlete biological passport is very, very important. And it enables, as you say, or the sports federation to look at an athlete. And again, we don't know the identity of those athletes, but to look at an athlete over time. And obviously, if you have an idea of a baseline sample or a baseline record of the athlete's results, then if there is something that sits outside of that baseline, then you can identify that much more easily than if you were just taking a single one-off sample. So it's a very useful tool to monitor individuals.
We know that certain drugs are kind of obviously giving an advantage, steroids probably being the most obvious one, but there is an emergence of other sort of recreational drugs that are coming into, I think, ultra running, but possibly also elite athletics, something like cannabis. And it's on the banned list, although the performance enhancing aspect isn't clear, really, I would say. Do you see that the kind of WADA banned list is something that could evolve, and actually some of the things that are currently banned may no longer be banned, or vice versa? Is it kind of, you know, is there that flexibility there?
I think there definitely is scrutiny of what's on the list, and WADA produces regular reports of the substances that have been detected in athletes. And as far as I'm aware, there is the ability to remove things from the list or add them to the list as they see fit. So I think it is an ongoing process. It's not fixed in stone, certainly. And as you say, there are drugs coming onto the market, or drugs being used in ever sophisticated ways that may be clinically useful for one thing, but used in an anti-doping sense for another. So it is a complicated picture, and I think that there is always scrutiny to see if we can improve the prohibited list in terms of making sure that we cover the whole spectrum of events.
I mean, as these things evolve, is there sort of a substance or a stimulant of choice that over the years that you sort of like becomes the thing that you find you're testing for more regularly, or certainly seeing results for more often? Does it ebb and flow like that, or is it just across the board you're either positive or you're not?
Well, I think, again, I probably need to refer you to the WADA publications, because they do by country, and they do a global report on which drugs are most common. You've mentioned the anabolic steroids, and they're certainly drugs that I think are commonly seen across anti-doping laboratories.
Obviously, doping is wrong. I'm not saying doping isn't wrong, but do you think there's like an emotional part of this for you? Because I know you don't know who those athletes are, but when you get a test and it comes back positive, do you think, oh God, their career's over? Like, do you mean is it a hard thing to deal with when it comes through and it is positive and you know someone's career's going to suffer?
I think the anxiety from our point of view is that we've done everything in our power to make sure the analysis is correct and there isn't any errors anywhere, and that we've doubly checked the data, and everything that's been possible has been done by the laboratory to ensure that the result that we're reporting is the correct result according to the urine sample that we receive. So I think the anxiety is around making sure that is correct, because I think it would be awful if there was a sample that was reported that wasn't a correct result. So I think that's where our anxiety lies, in making sure that we do everything possible to confirm that the results that we've got are the right ones.
One of the interesting aspects is it seems to be that some people can be banned kind of, or these revelations can come out after their career is over. I think Lance Armstrong was an example of that. From your perspective, how does that work? Do these tests stay on file, and can you be told you need to go back into those tests and have a closer look at those samples?
We don't keep that data. So everything that we do is anonymized, and it's reported onto something called ADAMS, which is the WADA results platform. So any of the information that's historical is retained by the sports federation, and they manage the athletes. And the UK anti-doping in this country will manage with them any adverse findings that they get. So the laboratory just does the analytical stuff, and we report the results. And that really is where our involvement comes to an end. We obviously have to do a report on the results if there are positive cases, but we don't get involved in the repercussions for the athlete or not when the results come out.
Oh, that's fascinating. And on that testing process itself that you go through, just to give an idea of how many times a sample is tested, or just sort of like how often it's, how many different, as you said, different standards it has to meet. But I mean, how long does a test take?
Well, it depends which type of test, but there are several different screens that the sample has to go through to cover all the drugs on the prohibited list. And we have urine samples and blood samples. So I think we have an A bottle and a B bottle, which I presume you will know about. So the sample testing is always done on the A bottle. And then so aliquots are taken out of the A bottle for testing and the screening process. And then if we find a substance that is banned, we have to confirm that. So there will be two lots of aliquots in that case. And anything that's spare from the A sample is stored frozen and the B alongside the B sample, so that if the confirmation is found to be a banned substance and we've confirmed that, then the athlete can then come, or a representative usually, come to the laboratory to observe the B sample analysis, and then we will repeat the whole process again in the B sample to demonstrate that the confirmation was a valid finding.
Wow.
Wow, that must be tense. Come back.
I mean, how do you build in? I mean, Rick previously mentioned Icarus, and I mean, if anyone hasn't seen the movie, it's sort of a revelationary thing about how Russian state was involved in a very sophisticated way of getting around doping control and all those sorts of things. I mean,
you said a courier would deliver a sample to you. I mean, the checks beforehand, everything's sealed,
if there's anything slightly untoward with a package, you know, then that sample has to be destroyed. I guess these are all the things not just the testing.
Yes. Yeah, so it's a very, controlled process. So the athlete will be notified that they have been selected for doping. They go to a special doping control station. If it's an event like the Commonwealth Games, they provide a sample that's witnessed, and the sample will then be the sample is provided in tamper-proof bottles, and then those are sealed, and then they have the paperwork with them, which is the chain of custody, and that is then couriered to a laboratory. And once it gets there, we check that everything that is on the form agrees with everything that's on the bottle. So there will be code numbers for the bottle that are on the paperwork and on the bottle. We confirm all of that. We then book it in, and there will be then, once we've got the sample, we then contact the testing agency and say, can you confirm the tests that are being taken, that are required on this sample? And they provide us with that information, and that's all booked in, and the sample is then registered. So there are several checks going along the way, and if there are any anomalies, as we call them, if the code is wrong, or if there's a digit missing, or if the sample has broken, or if the seal has broken on the sample, or if there's only an A bottle instead of an A, anything that's untoward, as you say, we immediately stop the analysis, or we don't start the analysis process, and we contact the testing agency and seek their advice. And it's only once we've got their advice that we proceed. So there are checks all the way through.
It's very rigorous, isn't it? Yeah,
it really is. I was going to say, have there been any great leaps forward since your involvement in this whole thing? Has there been one bit of tech or one testing procedure that has been a sort of absolute sort of game changer in the way that you guys can work?
Well, there are always technological advances, because we're always looking to make the analysis shorter or better or more comprehensive. I think, and again, WADA is very much looking, and the anti-doping field is looking at alternative ways of collect or alternative types of samples. So urine is great, but obviously it's quite invasive in that the person has to be observed producing that sample. So where WADA is looking at and actually used what's known as dry blood spots. They were piloted at the Beijing Olympics, and that's just a finger prick sample, which theoretically means it's a much shorter sample collection time. It's a much smaller amount of biological sample. So there's always that type of innovation of how can we make this process easier on the athlete, easier in terms of sample processing. And analytically, what can we do to get the sample analysed and the results reported as quickly as we can? So there's always that kind of work ongoing. And at the moment, I think dried blood spots are the sample that's being piloted in terms of how that could fit into the anti-doping spectrum of biological fluids that we use at the moment.
Is it more accurate? Is blood more accurate than urine, or is it no difference?
Well, blood gives you a more of here and now type of information, because your blood is flowing around your body, so it tells you what's going on in the body here and now. A urine sample is a slightly longer window, it tells you what the body has used in the last few days or so, because it's an elimination sample. So there's a bit of difference in terms of those two samples. But I don't think dry blood spots would replace urine. It would just be perhaps as an adjunct if you wanted to collect more samples in a short period of time, then you could use dry blood spots, for instance.
When you have an athlete who's been allowed to take perhaps use an inhaler for an asthma or those sorts of things, and they are you informed beforehand? No, because you know, it's anonymous, isn't it? So you wouldn't have an idea. So you might return a positive for a steroid in an inhaler, but actually it's already been signed off that that's okay.
Yeah, so there's something called therapeutic use exemptions. So if we identify a substance like that, then we can ask if there is a therapeutic use exemption. So obviously there are some products, like you've just said, drugs within asthma inhalers, which are also banned. So if we detect a substance like that, then we will ask the testing authority if there is a therapeutic use exemption in place, and then they will guide us as to whether we should report that or not as a suspicious finding.
The psychology of cheating, I mean, where do we even start? I guess that's not your, like none of us can really understand. Do you think kind of have an opinion over doing this job for so long, you know, why people do it? Do you think athletes do it because they're coaches or because they think other people are doing it? Do you kind of have an insight into why you think people dope?
Well, I was actually at a presentation in Tokyo before the Tokyo Olympics, and there was a presentation from an athlete who'd been caught and banned for doping, and it was quite interesting to listen to him, really. And you find that it's not just, they're not isolated. There's usually a team of people around them who are supporting that process of using banned substances, and they're not individuals on their own thinking I'm going to cheat. It's much more that it's a sophisticated event of which they're one part, probably the important part if they're the talented athlete, and being a very talented and very successful athlete comes with it fame, recognition, financial benefits, which just, again, isn't necessarily linked to them alone, but to their family. And so it's a very I think it's a very complicated area to get into. And I don't think anybody sets out at the beginning of their career as a promising sports person to think I'm going to be a cheat. They want to be the best they can. And it's so, I think they're part of a process, but I don't think we should necessarily put all the blame, and certainly not assume that they're in it alone, because you quite often find, and as the case with the Russian case, which has been sort of widely publicised, it wasn't just the athletes involved. There was a systematic, a systematic process for enabling doping to take place, and the athletes were one small part of that. And I think that's what I would say is a problem when trying to identify the psychology of cheating, because it's not just a single person that's involved in that process.
Your professional background is within addiction. So do you think that comes into any of this? Do you think none of these substances are technically addictive, correct? But is there a sort of a physical addiction and then a mental addiction with any of these sorts of things?
I think it's a really complicated question. I think I'd be more comfortable answering that in terms of illicit substances,
right?
Because you can see that you become used to using different substances, and you can think about that in terms of steroids. You know, there are people who become habitual users of steroids and dependent on steroids. Again, it's, if you think of addiction as a habit forming process, then if you're using a drug that's gaining you a benefit, even if it's not physically dependent forming, there may be that psychological boost that you get from winning, which is associated with that, the compound that you're using. And in that sense, it becomes habitual. And so you become addicted to that process, if that makes sense. So I think it's very interesting and obviously quite difficult to research, because you can't recruit cheaters and say, well, let's talk to you about this process and see if we can understand the reason for your behavior, and until usually much later down the line, if they've been caught and they talk about it. But it's a fascinating area, and certainly not a simple one, I think.
A lot. Is there anything, Kim, any area of this that you we haven't covered, you think, that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I think I'd like to finish on a positive note, actually. And I think the vast majority of people that, you know, take part in elite sport are not drug users, and they don't use substances. And I think we should shout out for them, and also, you know, how well they do, and that's the health and well-being of people who undertake sport, and particularly our elite athletes, is something that we should be concerned about. And I think the majority of people are there at the top of their game because they are exceptional athletes, and I think we should always bear that in mind, really.
100%.
Absolutely. Professor Wolf, thank you so much for joining us. It's been fascinating. It's answered many of my questions, which I just didn't know the answer to anyway, so hopefully it's done the same for everyone else.
Good. Well, I hope there's been some reassurances there that we do try and look after the samples we receive and treat them with the utmost respect and always analyse them effectively.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Kim Wolf, and to you, of course, for listening.
You can subscribe to 3 issues of Runner's World for just £5. Head over to hearstmagazines.co.uk/runnersworldpodcast to get this exclusive listener offer.
And you can listen to the Runner's World UK podcast on Acast, iTunes, all your favourite podcast apps. Just search Runner's World UK and please do subscribe. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love, and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.